This is a girl of poor family writing to Oxford, having tried astronomy for the very first time.
Guess what, madam? Every night in my dream, I play only with stars and nebulas. Once I enter the observatory, I forget everything. I feel I have entered heaven.
How to enthrall those young minds. How to make 14 and 15-year-olds imagine they've entered heaven. Get them to do the real stuff. Today's Science Show is about capturing the imagination, inventing new industries, and freeing the frustrated multitudes from outdated and bankrupt thinking. We begin in Oxford, where Professor Catherine Blundell is showing schoolgirls how to do astrophysics. Okay, Catherine Blundell, we're looking at a picture of you, presumably in India, and your class is of young women, girls.
That's right. I am indeed in India, in southern India, and I'm speaking to a classroom of 14, 15-year-olds. The ones we're looking at in the photograph are indeed girls. Out of the shop, that half of the classroom has boys. This is a school that I have quite a lot of connections with. It's a remarkable school in many ways. It's founded by the government of India in order to give an education to the bright children of rural families who would otherwise be working on the land. And it's a boarding school so that these children can receive a good education. It draws children from about 300 different villages from across Karnataka. And indeed, over 50% of the children at this school are first-generation literates.
They look rapt, they look amazingly attentive, and you're pointing at the screen. What are you talking about there?
I'm actually talking about the centre of our galaxy. So I'm teaching these girls about astronomy, maths, science more generally, as part of doing my little bit to just try and educate them a bit more generally about science.
Next picture, please. And there is a small picture of two young women looking. It says start of night setup. I presume they're in some sort of control room of the telescope?
That's exactly right. They're in the observatory, which contains a telescope, much like the one at the India school. These two girls are in the observatory by themselves. I'm pictured in the top corner. We're communicating over Skype. I'm actually in my home in Oxford talking to them and helping them to learn how to set up the telescope at the very start of an observing session.
Okay, and they're paying attention again, and the next picture they're going, ah!
Indeed, it's the first time that those girls have moved the telescope, have controlled it from the computer, and they do look pretty awestruck, I have to say, as they see how the telescope has just, which is a huge, great big thing. It weighs about 160 pounds, and it just slews beautifully, like a ballerina. It's so smooth, so graceful.
Well, they might be awestruck, but they're certainly attentive about it.
They're absolutely attentive. They're paying very, very close attention to how the observatory works. It is the first time these two girls have ever used a telescope to observe.
And the final picture, they're happy, they're smiling, they're grinning, they're looking.
They're gleaming, aren't they? That's the first time that they've looked at a galaxy, and it's an image that they themselves have observed.
Before we go on to the next picture, where do these girls come from? You've organised something yourself to get them to be keen on astronomy?
I've organised a network of telescopes around the planet. All five observatories we have now are located in schools. The reason for the location of the telescopes is that I wanted them to be separated in longitude so that there was always at least one telescope in darkness. Darkness, of course, being an absolute must for doing optical astronomy.
It also means you never sleep.
Yes. Yes, I am getting a little weary, I have to say. But the motivation for doing this is that we wanted to observe time-variable phenomena in our galaxy that know nothing about the human need for sleep, but evolve on timescales of hours and days. And I'd increasingly found it was very, very difficult to get the kind of data flow that was needed in order to make a proper job of studying the rich behaviour of some of these systems.
So these young people are actually doing something useful for you?
I think so. But they're also having fun and they're becoming engaged in science, and that's pretty important to me as well.
Next picture.
So this picture is a different group of girls at the South Africa school. There's a certain amount of giggling going on, as you can see, and it's fairly important in all of this, as I've shared the observatories with the schools, that the girls are having fun in what they're doing, because I think when you're having fun, you're in a place where you can learn, and it does seem that science is something that doesn't necessarily appeal to girls. So I'm very happy indeed to see them having fun in these observatories.
Yes, well, it doesn't appeal necessarily if it's physics. You're a physicist, and do you understand what it is about this seeming alienation from physics?
Many girls these days are perhaps a bit put off by the fear of failure and by the idea that something is difficult. And I hope very much by just embracing them in the business of actually doing astronomy, which of course embraces physics, it embraces engineering, it embraces mathematics. I hope that by actually just doing it, as I say, they can learn that maybe they're rather good at it and perhaps might continue.
You need to take the first step. So let's look at the last picture and then the letter to you that says, "Hope you saw the image of Jupiter," and read on.
It was magnificent. We even saw Messier 76, Messier 74, M31, M32, M42, and many more. These are all different nebulae and galaxies. "Guess what, madam? Every night in my dream, I play only with stars and nebulas. Once I enter the observatory, I forget everything. I feel I have entered heaven."
Now, isn't that incredible? Is that a rare comment?
It's a rare email. I don't often get emails from the students at the schools, and this is obviously a pretty special one. But I have a strong sense all the way around the world that the school children are saying very similar things. At least I presume that's what they're saying at the Chile school. My Spanish isn't quite so good.
So you've got Chile, you've got South Africa, you've got India, and you've got Australia as well.
Yes, there's a school in New South Wales where we established the very first telescope. And more recently, just last year, we commissioned a telescope on the other side of Australia, in Western Australia. That one's not in a school, it's on private land, but it really helps us with the business of collecting data.
And have the schools been naturally helpful, or do they wonder what an astrophysicist from Oxford is doing, asking them to take part and have the girls stay up late?
I have no idea what they wonder to themselves, but they truly have been helpful, letting me borrow ladders, generally really being so, so positive about the benefits that this brings to the girls and at a couple of the schools to boys also.
What is your work actually these days? What are you studying?
These days I'm studying black hole systems in our galaxy, specifically the ones that are in orbit around stars that are a little bit more normal, more like our sun except more massive, and very much looking at the interplay between gravity and angular momentum and trying to look at the big picture of how these systems evolve. So the story really starts with the black hole ripping the other star to pieces. But it's a popular misconception that black holes just suck matter into them. Well, black holes don't just suck. It turns out that because this quantity I mentioned, angular momentum, is a conserved quantity in our universe, it turns out that that brings the most rich and extraordinary range of phenomena. So we actually see matter being spat out from the vicinity of the black hole at speeds approaching the speed of light. And I'm trying to study the interplay between the cause and effect processes that govern the attraction, the accretion of matter, and then the expulsion of matter.
And you actually do see that stuff coming out the middle, top and bottom.
That's exactly the kind of system we're talking about. And yes, we can absolutely study it. So these telescopes are all equipped with a kind of instrument called a spectrograph, designed by my colleague Steve Lee at the Australian Astronomical Observatory. These spectrographs do something really wonderful with the light that the telescope collects. They split up the light across the spectrum, all the way from blue light across to red light, and they split it up and reveal particular peaks of emission that correspond to particular chemical elements. For example, hydrogen, helium, oxygen, all sorts of different elements. So not only can we understand about the evolving chemistry in some of these systems, but crucially, we can learn about the evolving physics. Specifically, we can look at the dynamics of the matter being attracted towards the black hole. We can see it rotating, in some cases swirling in. But in addition, at the same time, we can monitor how that material subsequently gets spat out at speeds close to the speed of light. And we're able to measure that very, very directly in a way that has, for the first time, the continuity we need to make all the direct links for these remarkable processes.
And when you tell the young women, and young boys for that matter, about what you've just said, do they take you seriously? Do they think, well, I've looked at the stars, I've looked at the galaxies, and I've seen these amazing machines that help you study them. I want to be part of it, however tough it seems.
I truly see an increasing enthusiasm amongst the schools to actually grapple with some of the scientific skills that they themselves need to learn, some quite advanced concepts. That's absolutely developing. But I think it's fair to say that the first time I gave talks at these schools, trying to communicate the fact that though the night sky is very, very beautiful, it is not static, it is not serene, it is not steady, but it is evolving, it is dynamic. And in communicating the fact that we can study this pattern of evolution, this evolving galaxy in which we live, that did seem to be quite an important moment for a number of people in the audience. I do remember one time very clearly when I gave a talk at the India school a few years ago, and I showed them the first light image, which is a very special image you take when you first commissioned a telescope that my colleague Steve Lee and I observed there. It was of the moon. The moon's a great first light target because it's big and it's there and you can find it easily. And it was a beautiful image. You could see its craters and its scratches really, really clearly. And this is not a school where they have glossy magazines or televisions or iPads with retina screens or anything like that. But there must have been about two-thirds of that audience with tears rolling down their cheeks. So it does seem that the business of bringing the observatories to the schools is doing something quite powerful.
Powerful indeed. Catherine Blundell is Professor of Astrophysics at Oxford, and she runs Global Jet Watch, which you can find online and, of course, on the Science Show website and see those keen young faces from five continents, including Australia.